This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Nation Fighting Blindness and the AMD Alliance are working together to provide answers for those affected and for those at risk.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. Welcome to Queer Voices for a holiday edition. This is Labor Day, and this evening we've got a couple very important issues to talk about. One is David Elliott's going to be joining us from Washington, and we're going to be talking about the Supreme Court nomination and also about the lack of interest with us. Larry Bonneries will be calling us and he'll be here live talking to us about what happened in New Orleans. But first, we go to the BBC.
BBC News with Jonathan Wheatley. A week after Hurricane Katrina devastated large parts of the southern United States, President Bush has ordered a state of emergency in more American states, making 10 in total. The status will allow them to apply for emergency aid as they cope with devastation or an influx of survivors. Mr. Bush has been visiting America's Gulf Coast for the second time in 4 days to take stock of the rescue and relief operation. From Washington, Jonathan Beale reports.
A state of emergency now stretches from America's southern states right into the heart of the Midwest, much of the country now affected in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. The White House has now put Florida, West Virginia, Oklahoma, North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Utah, Colorado, Arkansas, and Texas in a state of emergency. All are now eligible for emergency federal funding, from dealing with evacuees from the worst affected states to protecting public health and safety.
The former American President Bill Clinton has echoed concerns about the speed of the federal government's response. He was speaking in Houston at the launch of a national fundraising campaign with another former president, George Bush Sr. Mr. Clinton said he thought it appropriate that there should be an analysis of what happened, but only at a later date. The priority, he insisted, must be to help survivors recover.
New Orleans, almost 30% are living below the poverty line. We need to have a fund where we can fill in the blanks and help people that are otherwise going to be totally overlooked. And just remember, a lot of these people, they have no cars, no homes, no clothes, no nothing. They depend on us to give them a future, and we'll do what we can.
An American surgeon involved in trying to provide medical services after Hurricane Katrina has strongly criticized coordination efforts. Dr. Jeffrey Guy of the Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee, said there was too much bureaucracy. He said that because of the localized system of government in America, there was, as he put it, no overarching authority. The reality, he said, is that no one is in charge. You're listening to the news from the BBC. Typhoon Nabi has lashed several Japanese islands with winds of 160 kilometers an hour. Television pictures showed waves 9 meters high, engulfing coastal areas of Amami Oshima, south of Japan's main southern island of Kyushu. Power has been cut to more than 20,000 households. In Tokyo, 2,000 homes have been flooded by torrential rain brought by the typhoon. The United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan says he expects more criticism when the final report on the disgraced Iraqi oil for food program is published on Wednesday. In an interview with the BBC, Mr. Annan said he accepted responsibility for inadequacies and failures, but insisted that there were large areas of the program which had been outside his control.
Honestly, I wish we were never given that program, and I wish UN will never be asked to undertake that kind of a program again. There were failures, you know, there were inadequacies, there were situations that we couldn't deal. But what is important is that we draw the lessons, we repair and reform the organization, both in policy and managerial issues. And that's why my package before them includes management reform.
The program, set up in the 1990s, allowed Iraq to use its oil revenues for food at a time when economic sanctions were in force. Reports into the scheme's administration have identified corruption and mismanagement. Five people have been killed in a large explosion in Gaza City. At least three houses were destroyed, one of which was inhabited by a family linked to the Palestinian militant group Hamas. It's not yet clear what caused the blast. From Gaza, our correspondent Alan Johnson reports.
Not long after dark, one of Gaza City's crowded eastern neighborhoods was shaken by a huge blast. There are reports that at least three houses were destroyed. Ambulances raced into the main hospital in the center of town, bringing the dead and many injured. One of the homes destroyed belonged to a family heavily linked to the Hamas militant organization.
Police in Egypt say at least 29 people have been killed and many more injured in a fire at a theatre. The fire broke out while a play was being performed in front of a packed audience in the town of Beni Suef, south of Cairo. The blaze started when a candle set fire to curtains in the theatre, causing panic among the audience. Many of the victims are believed to have been trampled in the rush to escape the burning building. The security forces in Saudi Arabia have continued to exchange gunfire with suspected Islamic militants who have taken refuge in a building in the eastern city of Dammam. The siege began on Sunday after the security forces killed two suspected militants who they say were connected to Al-Qaeda. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, and tonight on the show we have a number of things going on, including David Elliott's going to be calling us soon, talking to us from Washington, and giving us sort of a national perspective of what is going on up there, or more than likely what's not going on up there. Also, we're going to have Holly Woodworth, who is calling...
Woodlawn,
who is going to be at the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival opening this Thursday, and in the second hour, or somewhere around there, Larry Bonarice is going to be with us, and he is from New Orleans. He lived here in Houston for a number of years. He actually works for the mayor, doing community outreach, and he's going to be talking about what went on there and also about some fundraising opportunities we're going to have to help the GLBT community. But anyway, this is Jack Falinski.
J.D. Doyle.
I'm Deborah Bell. And, of course, we're into like a week now of being the new home of many thousands of people from our sister state of Louisiana and what looks to be probably will become their permanent home as well.
For many of them, yes. And there's talks about enrolling the kids in school, and this is going to be a long-term deal.
Yeah, I think some people are beginning to have it sink in, the impact. But really, the magnitude is so incredible. And, of course, we in our community have concerns about our gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community from Louisiana who are now relocated. If you have friends or relatives that are from Louisiana and need help, the Community Center is organizing some efforts. The Montrose Counseling Center and the Montrose Clinic also have stepped up to the plate and are offering services. There's also a special project that I'm getting involved in conjunction with the Community Center called Lesbians Helping Lesbians. And if you want more information about that, you can contact me via email, thedivadeb@yahoo.com. And do we have David on the line,
Jack? I believe we have David. Are you on the line?
Okay, from Washington.
Well, good evening. How are you tonight?
We're doing fine. What's going on up there in Washington, or what's not going on up there in Washington?
Well, that's pretty much the story, Jack. You know, tonight we are grappling with the aftermath of the worst natural disaster in U.S. history and the greatest failure of our government to act when our citizens needed its help the most. Hundreds of thousands of refugees have overwhelmed Texas, particularly Houston, as you know.
And we know, yes.
Tens of thousands of others occupy camps in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas. Thousands of others fill our schools, churches, community centers, armories, in places as far away as California and Illinois, and here in the District of Columbia. For thousands, for hundreds of thousands, there is rage. Rage at the failure of our government to engage in the most fundamental type of homeland security. Not security against terrorism or Al-Qaeda, which has yet to ravage New Orleans. Rather, security against a very predictable natural disaster. And let me be clear about a couple of things here. It is not George W. Bush's fault that a hurricane struck New Orleans and Mississippi. It is not George W. Bush's fault that New Orleans' famed levees were not up to the task. It is, however, the shockingly inept, incompetent, and immoral response of this administration that has become a metaphor for George W. Bush's misplaced priorities and lack of empathy for ordinary Americans. Where were the buses to evacuate those who could not tend for themselves? Where was the plan to avoid the bedlam that developed in the Superdome and Convention Center where murders occurred and young girls were raped? How could it have taken 4 days for National Guard troops to arrive to restore order to the city? How many thousands of people died, and perhaps are still dying, because a house-to-house search for survivors did not begin until this weekend? In the end, how many of those dead will have turned out to be the elderly, the infirmed, the destitute, the people most in need of country and community, the people who needed us the most, the people whom we abjectly failed? The name of this disaster was Hurricane Katrina, but I call it George W. Bush's moment of miss, mal, and nonfeasance, his moment of incompetence. Today, hundreds of thousands of people subsist in a rage. Thousands of others do not subsist at all. They're dead. But their memory is not lost, nor is a sense of what is owed by us to the survivors. The New Orleans Times Picayune today published a most unusual open letter to the president. The newspaper called for the firing of every official at the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Quote, "We're angry, Mr. President, and we'll be angry long after our beloved city and surrounding parishes have been pumped dry," the editorial said. "Our people deserved rescuing. Many who could have been were not. That's to the government's shame." The editorial continued, quote, "Every official at the Federal Emergency Management Agency should be fired, Director Michael Brown especially. No expense should have been spared. No excuses should have been voiced." Close quote. So who is this Michael Brown, this head of FEMA we now hear so much about? Jack, do you know who he is?
Well, I understand he got fired from his last job.
Well, he's a Bush campaign contributor.
Right.
And he's the former head of the International Arabian Horse Association.
Yes.
Now, what does running the International Arabian Horse Association have to do with emergency response?
Well, as far as I know, no Arabian horses died in New Orleans.
Well, probably there were.
What are Arabian horses anyway? I mean, I'm sure they're very pretty. But seriously, what does this response say about our country today? What does it say about our values?
Well, I find it interesting that Castro has even offered help. Venezuela has offered help. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I read that there are actually some Canadian, whether they're guards or whatever, there are some Canadians in Plaquemines Parish got there before anybody from this U.S. government got there. And yesterday, I remember hearing on Larry King that the mayor of Hattiesburg, Mississippi, when he asked about FEMA, he said, "Who?" FEMA did not even show up as of yesterday in Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
The Bush administration has destroyed FEMA.
And Maureen Dodd said that, you know, when this happened, he went west.
Well, and you know, Jack, it's interesting you mentioned Maureen Dodd, who is the New York Times columnist, because I actually wanted to close my piece, if I could, by quoting from her column, which was entitled "The United States of Shame." And she talks about how Bush told NBC's Diane Sawyer, quote, "I don't think anyone anticipated the breach of the levees." And then she goes on to say, "Why does a self-styled can-do president always lapse into such lame who-could-have-known excuses? Who on earth could have known that Osama bin Laden wanted to attack us by flying planes into buildings?
Well, if he read the reports that were put on his desk, he would have known that.
Well, any official who bothered to read the 9/11 intelligence briefs. And she asks, who on earth could have known that an American invasion of Iraq would spawn a brutal insurgency, terrorist recruiting boom, and possible civil war? Well, any official who bothered to read the CIA's pre-war reports. And then she asks, who on earth could have known that New Orleans sinking levees were at risk from a strong hurricane? And she says, anybody who bothered to read the endless warnings over the years about the Big Easy's uneasy fishbowl. And she concludes, it would be one thing if President Bush lacked empathy but could get the job done. But it is a chilling lack of empathy combined with a stunning lack of efficiency that could make this administration implode. And she, you know, her final sentence in this column, she says, who are we if we can't take care of our own? Close quote. And I say, who are we indeed? And Jack and Deborah, that's my report tonight from Washington, D.C., where hundreds of refugees, first sent to Texas and then to Arkansas and now to D.C., are arriving today to begin a new life.
Well, it is really a sad statement of what's going on in this country.
But, David, I have to tell you, we're very, very proud of our city, of Houston, and our state, and what's taking place here.
Absolutely.
It is amazing. And I live very close to the Astrodome, and I'm seeing on a daily basis what is going on, and I'm on the internet, and I know what people are doing and rising to the occasion. Of course, we're hitting the immediate needs, but this is long term. This is at least a decade, and it will take a while before they can even begin to rebuild in New Orleans. And, it's never going to be the same because so much history has been wiped out. And I have a fear that they'll Disneyland Bourbon Street is what they'll do. Just the hearing people's personal stories, hearing the stories of the people here that have opened their homes and their hearts, the welcome they have given, no questions asked, I'm here to help. That's wonderful. But of course the aftermath of the storm is the number one thing on most of our minds. But the second thing on our mind, David, and I can't let you get away without commenting on it, is the death of Supreme Court Chief Justice Rehnquist and the Roberts nomination.
Right. And before I address that, Deborah, let me just say that as a native Texan, somebody from Austin, Texas, we are very proud up here. The Burger Center in Austin, where I graduated from high school, from where our graduation ceremonies were held, has been taken over by the American Red Cross, and that's where many of the refugees in Austin are being held. And earlier today, I was with a friend of mine, also from Austin, and she joked that that Rick Perry's very excellent and outstanding response to this whole situation makes up for all of the dumb things he said over the last 6 months. So we're proud.
And I don't think you can give a lot of credit to Perry on that, because I think it was a lot of cities and counties that originally did this. And it was real interesting how Rick Perry said that we're going to educate everybody who needs, education, when we haven't funded education for Texas students.
Well, that's a good point, Jack. That is a very good point. But I do want everybody who's listening to this program tonight to know that those Texans, well, some of us Texans in Washington, D.C., are very proud of what your community
yes.
is doing.
The community is doing incredible. And I also got to give a lot of credit, because as soon as this happened, there was a story in the paper that the George R. Brown may get some of those conventions that will not be able to go to New Orleans. And that within a few days, the mayor basically said, we need George R. Brown for the people who are, fleeing Louisiana. And he says, that's our first priority before we worry about...
Mayor White responded before the president did. And... Dick Cheney was missing in action. I just now found out today that he was in Wyoming.
He was in Wyoming.
On vacation.
Condoleezza Rice.
Condoleezza was frolicking in New York.
I guess they don't put on the TV and watch CNN or anything.
Right.
But,
you know, that's the amazing thing is that we're better. Well, and I think what was said, Bill Maher said, that basically it was a news media that was the first responders to this.
Mm-hmm. They were all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
They knew all about it, and it's, you know, it's like, don't they watch TV?
Well, that's
apparently
what Ted Koppel asked Michael Brown was, hey, you know, haven't you been hearing the reports? We've known about this. And he and Michael Brown responded by saying, well, officially, it was the third day.
Michael Brown did not know about the 15,000 refugees at the New Orleans Convention Center. But, Deborah, to answer to your question, and I'm sorry to have gotten away from your question, but it's just that this hurricane is just, you know, we've never seen anything like this before.
And
well,
never
you know,
to again.
I think, you know, this definitely means that this is the worst president we've ever had. No two ways about it.
We knew that.
But he's proven himself.
Right.
And people have died. Can't we have something, murder charges against him?
High crimes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've got an election coming up next November, and that's how we take care of these things.
Oh, darn.
And you know, there are going to be an additional 200,000 sufficiently motivated Democrats anxious to vote. To register to vote, I'm sure, in Texas.
Well, this is one thing. The people that are in the shelters here, for the most part, and certainly those people that are still in the affected areas, and we're talking, you know, a much wider area than just New Orleans. I mean, of course, that was sort of the biggest impact, but I have family in Mississippi, and I've certainly heard reports that they don't know. They don't know what has taken place. They're not hearing the reports or seeing the news, so they don't know the incompetence of the level. I mean, when George Bush visited them, you know, they had no idea that he is in fact responsible, and that yes, this is certainly something that was seen coming. There was an excellent a series on PBS that was shown here Sunday about Louisiana called Louisiana, A History. It was filmed by Louisiana Public Broadcasting. And in the last hour, they talked about what would happen if a major hurricane hit the city of New Orleans. And they talked about the Superdome in such glowing terms. And I thought, what irony. You know, that some people lived and went to hell, you know, and still there's still people being rescued and still people that are dying because it's going to be too late for them. And, you know, it's just that is so appalling. But yes, let's go back to.
Well, let me just add one note, and we'll talk about this more the second hour. If you are interested in helping, there's many ways you can help. And the Montrose Counseling Center is offering a lot of services to people that are coming in from Louisiana or from anywhere in the storm. One of the ways you can help, in fact, I understand they're actually turning volunteers away today because there are so many volunteers, but they will need volunteers as time goes on. But also, if you want to make a monetary donation, you can do that through the Pride Committee, which is directly turning over every cent that is raised on this campaign to the Montrose Counseling Center, because they're in the service of doing that. You can go to pridehouston.org and either download the form to send in a donation, or you can do it directly through a secure part of the website.
Excellent. And you can also call the community center at 713-524-3818 to find out about volunteering, making donations, or if you are someone you know is a person that needs help, then they will help you out, help get you organized. Okay, David, back to Justice Roberts.
Sure, and I know my time is up here.
No, it's not.
Well, I'll try to be very brief. Some of your listeners might not know that this morning President Bush withdrew the nomination of Justice Roberts, to be an associate justice, and instead nominated him to be the Chief Justice, replacing William Rehnquist, who indeed died Saturday night. This nomination is going to go through pretty quickly. There's not going to be a huge controversy about it, but here it'll probably go through in late September. But here is what to look for. look for Bush's next nomination, this one going back, I know it's confusing, but this one to replace Sandra Day O'Connor, since now John Roberts will not be replacing Sandra Day O'Connor, he'll be replacing Chief Justice Rehnquist. The next nomination is going to be the key, and that could be the one that the Democrats really stand up and fight. It's probably either going to be Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, or it's going to be one of two women from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, either Edith Clement or Edith Jones. Either of those would be incredibly unacceptable and would really come out of the Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas mode of conservative judicial activism. And so, you know, we can expect probably Bush to announce his decision on the new nominee, I'd say probably in about a week or two. And that's going to be the big thing to watch. But John Roberts is going through. He's going to be confirmed as the next Chief Justice.
Well, we'll expect an update when that nomination is announced, your analysis of the
David,
individual.
Has anyone ever made Chief Justice without being on the court already?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Rehnquist himself was elevated from Associate Justice, but if you look before that, Warren and Berger, it's not uncommon.
Actually, I think it's more the rule than not.
Right. It's not uncommon at all. And, you know, a lot of people think that the Chief Justice has all of these powers that the other justices do not. The truth of the matter is he is referred to as... is referred to as first among equals. So he or she only gets one vote. But they do get to do things like... They run the Supreme Court, you know, they make sure the light bill is paid and there's adequate security and they schedule the conferences and that sort of thing. And they do the administrative end of it, but they also get to assign opinions, assuming that they're in the majority. And so that's a little bit of a power. Sometimes Justice Rehnquist would vote with the majority just so that he could assign the opinion and limit the opinion's impact. He was very political and very pragmatic in that regard.
Interesting.
Well, David, thank you very much for joining us this holiday. And what do you do in real life?
Well, in real life, Jack, I am the communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. You can find our website at www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org. You can find my blog at deathpenaltyusa.blogspot.com, deathpenaltyusa.blogspot.com. And, you know, Jack, it's going to be kind of a newsworthy month, so, you know, we might be talking again in another a week or two.
That's fine. You can always call us. And, David, thank you for joining us. And David joins us at least once a month, possibly more as the news cycle possibly changes. David, thank you very much.
Thank you all for having me. And I'd just like to say good evening to all of the listeners of Queer Voices.
And, of course, you are listening to Queer Voices. That is Randy Newman from Good Old Boys, and we're breaking format a little bit this evening. We're playing a artist who is not regularly identified as a GLBT artist, but Randy Newman has done a number of songs about Louisiana, New Orleans, and about sort of the human struggle. You're listening to Queer Voices on KPFT.
I am the voice of Pacifica Radio.
Ana Sot Radio Pacifica al KPFT 90.1 FM de Houston.
Unasikiza 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Yawan hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hi Pacifica Toy Kissing Sing.
Chaliye aaj hum sab mil karke is dharti pe shanti ke liye prarthna kare.
Tum to mun nahi lish tha chahiye lang dao bit. Tum to la Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
一同向和平進發, 我們是侯思俊的 Pacifica KPFT 90.1 FM 90.1.
Mimi Pacifica, uhuru wa mazungumzo kwa watu walio huru.
Hum taqat ke samne bhi sachai se bolte hain. Hum hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Let's all get together and pray for the peace on earth.
من غير العدالة مش ممكن يوجد السلام.
And we are continuing coverage of the aftermath of Katrina's visit to the Gulf Coast. And now we'll...
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. California's Senate says yes to civil marriage equality. Activists work for global GLBT union solidarity. And a very funny novel chronicles a really nice prom mess. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 3rd, 2005. The California Senate this week approved a bill to open civil marriage to same-gender couples, the first state legislative body in the U.S. to do so. Passage came with the minimum required 21 votes in favor, all from Democrats. The 15 votes against the bill included all the Republican senators and one Democrat, while three Democrats abstained. The bill, spearheaded by openly gay Democratic Assembly member from San Francisco, Mark Leno, moves next to the state assembly, where in June a similar measure fell four votes shy of the minimum 41 votes in favor. One assembly member who was absent for that vote will support the bill this time, but whether three more yeas can be found is in doubt. Only 1 week remains in the legislative session. Even if the assembly approves the bill, Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's spokesperson this week indicated he would not sign it into law, citing Proposition 22, a ballot initiative restricting marriage to one man and one woman that voters passed by a large margin in 2000.
Schwarzenegger already has another gay-supportive measure to consider. The Assembly gave final approval by 47-29 this week to a bill adding sexual orientation, gender identity, and marital status to categories protected under California's civil rights laws from discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations. While state courts have long recognized the law as protecting these groups, the bill clarifies the existing law, particularly with respect to public accommodations, by making that explicit. The Senate approved the same measure last week by a vote of 22-15.
Both houses of the California legislature have also approved a resolution calling for repeal of the so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that excludes open gays and lesbians from the U.S. military, the first state legislature in the nation to do so. The resolution, introduced by openly lesbian Democratic Senator from San Diego Christine Kehoe, was approved by the Senate 23-14 this week and by the Assembly 44-33 last week. Resolutions do not require the governor's approval.
An unusual legal struggle for equality in Canada regards divorce on the grounds of adultery. The Federal Divorce Act does not actually include a definition of adultery, and the venerable common law definition used in British Columbia does not recognize extramarital homosexual acts. While Canada offers no-fault divorce following a year of separation, adultery is one basis for an immediate divorce judgment. In December, a heterosexual woman in Vancouver was denied that immediate judgment based on her husband's gay affair until the provincial trial court could hear arguments as to why his relationship should be recognized as adulterous. Those arguments were heard this week, and the immediate divorce was granted as Justice Nicole Garson changed the traditional definition of adultery. It's the first such judgment in the nation, and it's precedent-setting. Canada's Department of Justice was an intervener in the case, and its position was that the Divorce Act must be interpreted in a manner consistent with the nation's new marriage equality legislation and with the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which ensures equal treatment regardless of sexual orientation. The woman was represented by lesbian gay rights activist attorney Barbara Findlay, who said the issue was of particular importance since Canada's legal same-gender marriages could be expected to lead to cases of homosexual adultery.
The relationship debate in Ireland this week centered on adoption. The Irish Catholic newspaper apparently broke the story that this year the Attorney General's office had interpreted the Adoption Act to mean that an individual could apply to adopt a child even if cohabiting with a partner, regardless of gender, although only legally married couples can adopt jointly. Apparently, the actual case the Attorney General's office had ruled on involved a woman in an unmarried heterosexual relationship, but the Adoption Board, which must approve all adoptions, whether the child is Irish or from another country, confirmed that at least three individuals in gay or lesbian relationships had applied to adopt children from other nations. Another source said an international adoption was nearly complete for a woman in a lesbian relationship. Even though the Adoption Board has approved only 66 individual adoptions over the past 13 years, some conservative activists demanded immediate legislation to prohibit adoptions by gays and lesbians. Lesbian gay activists and others believe Ireland's equality laws would not allow that. Justice Minister Brian Lenihan said the government has no plans for legislation to open adoptions to same-gender couples.
Britain's government has launched consultation on major fertility law reforms, including opening equal access to treatments for lesbians and other women without male partners. A parliamentary committee had already harshly criticized the current requirement for physicians to consider if a child will have a father before administering treatment. The Department of Health was careful to note that even if the law changed, it did not necessarily mean that fertility treatments for women without male partners would be paid for by the National Health Service. Physicians are also concerned at health risks posed by the current lack of regulation of sperm donations arranged over the Internet, a system some lesbians have turned to since other options are often closed. The current Human Fertilization and Embryology Act is 15 years old and generally agreed to be lagging far behind the changing technology and social conditions.
Also in Britain, the city of Manchester swelled with pride this week, literally, as about a quarter million visitors came to the original home of Queer as Folk for 10 days of events. For the Pride Parade, crowd estimates ranged from 45,000 to 200,000. Of the thousands who actually marched, media coverage generally focused on just 10 soldiers representing the British Army in the parade for the first time as part of its first major recruitment drive at a lesbian gay event. The Royal Air Force participated for the second time, this year presenting a float representing a fighter jet, which, to quote the London Times, featured an oversized cockpit. Pride Festival fundraising for lesbian, gay, transgender, and HIV charities set a new record.
In Canada, thousands watched the Pride Parade in Ottawa, whose marchers included a number of gay and lesbian couples who were celebrating their legal marriages. The upbeat event may have been a little happier for an attempt to set a record for the most same-gender couples kissing, a promotion staged by radio station Kiss FM that may have had 5,000 people smooching.
But there was no Pride Parade for Bulgaria's first national lesbian, gay, and trans festival after officials in the Black Sea city of Varna refused a permit. They cited a lack of clarity and precision in the application by the Bulgarian National Lesbian Gay Civil Rights Group, Gemini. Mayor Kirill Yordanov also rejected Gemini's plan to set up two tents to distribute information in a public education campaign, saying it failed to meet the legal requirements of a cultural event. Gemini proceeded with other events planned for private venues while threatening lawsuits and vowing to hold a parade next year. Leaders of Bulgaria's Orthodox Church had publicly criticized the event as destructive of Christian values and had threatened to stage a counter-demonstration.
Miss Teen Bahamas beauty pageant winner Gary McDonald publicly identified herself as a lesbian this week as she held a press conference to claim the pageant had discriminated against her because of her sexual orientation. The pageant committee then announced that they were stripping her of her title because she'd held that press conference without their permission. The committee denied they'd made any such decision previously, although they admitted that they do not condone or support homosexuality. In fact, one pageant official was quoted as saying teens should not have an established sexual identity, and the pageant promotes abstinence. Stated principles of the pageant are shaping young Bahamian women in spirituality, social behavior, academics, and personal development. There are numerous claims and counterclaims between McDonald and the pageant, as she says she did not receive promised prizes or the chance to represent the Bahamas at an international pageant, while the Bahamas Pageant Committee says she failed to make scheduled appearances and that they had been privately investigating one individual's allegations that McDonald had sexually harassed her. McDonald's threatened lawsuit may be the only way the conflicting stories are ever sorted out, but for the teen queen to be a lesbian is pretty strong stuff in the Bahamas, where some religious groups have vigorously protested against gay cruise ships.
And finally, lesbian, gay, and trans people are among the many victims of Hurricane Katrina. New Orleans in particular has a long gay history and has some of the most gay-supportive ordinances of the U.S. South. But the state laws in the affected areas and for the most common destinations for the storm's refugees are some of the least gay-supportive in the nation and do not recognize same-gender relationships. This is bad news, especially for couples separated by the disaster, but also for couples who need assistance in its wake. That situation is exacerbated since much of the relief effort is by anti-gay churches. There are even some religious leaders who have blamed the hurricane on New Orleans' big annual gay party called Southern Decadence, which was canceled due to storm warnings. U.S. lesbian gay organizations have joined in a coalition called the Hurricane Katrina LGBT Relief Fund, which you can learn about at www.nyacyouth.org. Among mainstream organizations, the American Red Cross does not discriminate in its relief efforts.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 3rd, 2005, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
down of New Orleans.
This is JD, and that was Patrick Arena from his second album called Captured Alive with the very relevant song, Do You Know What It Means to Miss New Orleans?
Well, it was probably about 23 years ago that I stepped into the studio and started to work here at KPFT as a volunteer. And there was two people that I used to listen to a lot before that on the radio. And one was Ray Hill, and we know about his stories. But the other person was Larry Bonnaries. And, you know, they're really two of my mentors in this community. And it's how strange that 23 years later you're sitting here at the microphone under, unfortunately, not the best of circumstances. Larry went back to New Orleans, now working for the mayor. And, Larry, exactly what is your title?
Actually, I want to clear something up. When I was in New Orleans, everybody pronounced Larry Bonnaries correctly, which is French. But in New Orleans, they sort of anglicized the name for political purposes, and they used the words Larry Bagnaris. So what I say when I introduce myself now is Larry Bonnaries Bagnaris, so they get the French and the English translation. And to answer your question, I'm now the executive director of the city's Human Relations Commission, and also the liaison between the mayor's office and the city council for the city of New Orleans.
Wow. So, yes, I mean, certainly the city means a lot to you.
Actually, I had to take the earphones off when they were playing. Do you know what it means?
Yeah, we all were choking up in here, and Larry was visibly moved because that song couldn't be more perfect in light of what has happened, and makes us all have contemplation about what it would be like for us to experience such a thing, because it's New Orleans, I think, had a spirit and an energy. She was the Delta Queen.
Well, even more than that, I was so angered the other day. I was somewhere and somebody said, well, I was talking to my wife and she said, no more lunch at Mr. B's and no more hurricanes at Paddle Barns. I said, excuse me? And I was so angry. Give us 6 months and we'll show you what we can do. And it's sort of like, this city's going to come back, but it's going to come back with a lot of help from a lot of people.
Yeah, it'll be slow. And I live fairly close to the Astrodome, and in my neighborhood grocery store, there's a lot of people that sound like you, Larry. I'm hearing those.
Well,
accents.
Probably more than any other city, the fact that I think it's like 85% of the people who live in New Orleans was born there, and there's that, you know, because it's so original and so different, that everybody wants to go back.
Yeah, well, that whole area, people stay. It's generation after generation.
That's the problem. Nobody wanted to leave. I mean, realistically, you know, we're used to hurricanes going by us, and I was there until Sunday late because I felt like this thing's going to turn. But it was a number 5, which we've never had before, and the mayor said, you know, all of you guys, especially if you're not essential personnel, I want you to get yourself and your families out of here. And I spent 18 hours on the road, and everybody was so cordial. I've never seen a bunch of people trying to get out of a city that, you know, let people cut in, and nobody was blowing their horns, and there was so much energy in terms of everybody's supporting each other, even at the rest stops at the gas stations. It's sort of like, I think we were all surprised that for the first time New Orleans was really going to be hit by a major catastrophe.
Well, Larry, how about the situation with knowing that the levees probably wouldn't withstand a Category 5 and the money that the federal government did not provide.
You know, I had an interview this morning with a paper from San Francisco, because I have to first say thank you to the GLBT community. We've really pulled together to make an effort to help our own. And when he started to talk to me about the federal government, I became so angry. I realized I had to back up, because as a member of the Nagin staff, the Mayor Nagin staff, that I have to speak as an appointed official and as a member of the GLB community. And I would say to you, as usual, as I said to them, that the federal government and the city of New Orleans and everybody else can't depend upon them now. I must say that the general they sent in has done an incredible job in terms of making people move, and finally we've now got things going. And this guy is just full of energy and doing an incredible job. So you have those personalities in the federal system that having it move now. But for 5 days, we're without any assistance from anybody.
And what about the criticism that there were so many people that didn't have the means to get out of the city?
When the order
or the request to evacuate, first the request and then the order, how are you going to get out?
You know, it really angers me that people say, well, you know, those folks that just stayed there, they ought to be left there. You know, no, not everybody has a credit card, let alone this is the end of the month. People are depending upon Social Security and money coming in from the government. We're at their end of the month. They had no place to go. Where were they going to go?
Or no cars to get to.
And I was getting to that. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, what do you do? I mean, it's sort of like, I'm sitting here, there's a five coming, they told me to evacuate, and it's mandatory. I've got no money, I've got no transportation, I've got no gas, I've got no what place to go, so you stay put. And so those that are criticizing for the ones that are left behind, they should be educated to the fact that not everybody has the means or the well-to-do to get out of town when there's a hurricane, and we should, as the Christian church teaches us, not our community, but as the Christian church teaches us, take care of the least among us. And, you know, that's the thing I haven't seen. I haven't seen those people stepping up to the plate. So
something like, I think I saw a figure that 23% of the population in New Orleans was poverty level or below, maybe larger than that.
I think it's larger than that.
But that's the other factor, is that we're dealing with a very economically depressed area, people that didn't have the means or the wherewithal for a lot of reasons to get out are concerns. Because, I mean, it's one thing to get me, you know, somewhere. But if I've got several kids and maybe an elderly parent who's not well, and, you know, some of those stories of the kids with asthma or the newborns that were still in the hospital that got separated from their parents, it's just, you know, it's just so overwhelming. It boggles our minds.
I just would ask your listeners to close their eyes and envision the fact that you've lost your credit cards, you don't have a bank account, you're living from dollar to dollar, you've got kids. Even if you don't have kids, you have someone in that disabled, and you're now faced with a Category 5 hurricane, and you'll be told to evacuate. What do you do? You sit there and pray that this will pass by, as we've done for years. I lived in Houston during the 70s and the 80s. I left here in 86. I've been there ever since. It's my home. I lived there as a youth. I went through Camille. And I know what it takes for a family when my dad had three kids and my mom, and we sat in there and listened to the wind and the rain and what happened after that. Lucky for us, the water stopped at the street where we lived at. We helped in the hurricane shelter. But envision what it would take and how you can get out when you don't have the means. You just don't have the means.
Yeah, it's very frightening.
You know, I did hear yesterday that there actually was a parade yesterday. You know, it wasn't very big, but some of the people that were still in the quarter still did the little Southern Decadence parade. And you know, that's just
the spirit in New Orleans.
Exactly, the spirit. And some of the federal troops there, just, you know, they're just like beside themselves.
Well, you know, we celebrate birth and we celebrate death and we celebrate everything in between. So it wouldn't surprise me. We were preparing for Southern Decadence and we expected 150,000 visitors. We had met with the police, the gay and lesbian community, the GLBT community has a great relationship with City Hall as well as the police department. And we had a meeting prior to that, and I told the two grand marshals, I said, this is going to be the year that we really pull everything together. And as I was driving over here on Sunday evening late, I thought, you know, they're the ones that brought this to us, so I can't wait to see
that. Oh, well, there's been some right-wing people that have indicated, yeah, that was it.
That's ridiculous.
It's our punishment.
In that case, I want to make something clear. The reason why all the hurricanes have hit Florida is because they voted for George Bush.
Thank you.
All right?
Yeah.
I don't let that go.
Yeah,
right?
Thank you very much. Speaking of that spirit and the Southern decadence, just explain what that is for those who may not know.
Well, most people don't understand. The word Southern decadence takes a very negative tone, but it really was a party 33 years ago where people in the Quarter weren't doing anything, straight gays, were all in having a good time. They thought, let's parade through the Quarter, let's dress up and have a good time. And in the 70s, it was just a bunch of people having a good time going from bar to bar. In the 80s, it was the same thing. In the 90s, the computer took off, and people began to make access to it, and we started getting visitors from all over the world that joined the parade. As a matter of fact, when they say decadence, people think, particularly the religious right, want to make it Sodom and Gomorrah. Actually, it was something that the year that the plane went down in Florida, there was a group of people that dressed as flight attendants and people that were on a plane that were torn and full of rips and tears, and they were just spoofing. It's a spoof on life. It's sort of like Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
And it's just the gay community's way. And the incredible thing about that is that Southern Decadence is a celebration during the Labor Day weekend, which really, we have no business in July, we have no business in August, and Southern Decadence really help a lot of people pay their bills in that they missed in July and August. Wow. So the restaurant, the hotel, the bars, everything was really making up financially for everything. I ran into a person last night that said, I invested $23,000 into stuff that said Southern Decadence 33, 34, whichever it was. And I said, hold on to that, because next year when we go back, we're going to hold that line and make it still 30 decadent, Southern Decadent 34, and you'll be able to use that material. So it's really a way to celebrate life. It's a way to celebrate the GLBT community and at the same time include everybody.
You are listening to KPFT in Houston at 90.1 and 89.5 in Galveston.
Does New Orleans have a pride parade?
Yes, it does. We have our Pride Parade. It used to be in October. We moved it back to June this year. It's very much like a Mardi Gras parade. We have about 18 Mardi Gras floats and marching groups, et cetera, and we throw beads, which we love to do. Right now, actually on Sunday about 8 o'clock, we'd be throwing napkins in the air called Love is in the Air, which we do every Sunday night at a bar called Lafitte. We wanted to do that here in Houston, but the bar at JR's wouldn't allow that to happen.
Oh, no. Well, what do you know about the other area outside of New Orleans, the rest of the state and Mississippi?
Well, as far as waterlogged, we're talking about the French Quarter being pretty much safe in that area in terms of water. But everything to the east of the French Quarter, the Marigny, the Bywater, everything to the east to that canal is waterlogged. I mean, some areas 2 feet, 3 feet, some up to the roof. A lot of gays and lesbians live in that community. When you're talking about the north of the French Quarter, which would be beyond Armstrong Park, you're talking about more water. You're talking about a lot of gay community in the mid-city area. That has a lot of water. When you're talking about west of the city, which would be downtown, uptown, starting with Canal Street, then you're looking at water building from that area going up in that direction. Again, a lot of gays and lesbians live in that area of the uptown area, particularly in the Bywater area especially. But when you're talking about water, 85% now of the city is underwater. And what angers me is the break in that levee was about the size of this building.
Did you hear the accusation that some of the residents in New Orleans have made, that they think that it was actually exploded on purpose so that the Ninth Ward would be flooded instead of the...
Those rumors go on all the time.
I mean, that's pretty frightening, though, that people even are thinking that.
Yeah. The rumors go on all the time that, I heard that before the hurricane, that they were going to break the levees and flood the West Bank to save the French Quarter. And actually, what it is the French Quarter is the highest piece of land in the city.
It's at sea level.
And everything else goes down, and we're living in a bowl. And I think that the 17th Street Canal that broke was a situation where it's man-made. They said it wouldn't survive a 5. They said it was built for a 3.
Right.
We had a 5, and it happened. Lucky the rest of the levee held up.
Before September 11th, 2001, there was a analysis done of what would be the three worst things that could happen in this country. And one was a terrorist attack on New York City. One was an earthquake in San Francisco. And one was a Category 5 hurricane hitting the city of New Orleans.
That's correct.
We've had two of them happen. Let's keep our fingers crossed for San Francisco. Right.
And neither one was the federal government ready for.
No, no. And, I mean, to a certain degree, you have to wonder, you know, how do you get ready? But in so many cases, it's closing the gate after the horse has gotten out, you know?
Well, you get ready by having communications. I mean, there was no communications. That levee broke. And that levee broke after that levee withstood a hurricane number five, a level five, and it should have been fixed immediately. It happened in daylight. It broke in daylight. It took them 3 days to fix it. I don't even want to go there.
Yeah.
I mean, I just want to leave that because I don't want to make a statement today that might come back on me years later. But, I mean, I am really disgusted with the response. My mayor expressed it wholeheartedly from his heart.
Yes, you can't repeat what he said.
No,
because,
I can't.
Because I can't even say the term, but he was one angry mayor. And
well, when you've been up for 5 days and you've been trying to tell people to get out and you've evacuated 80% of your population, and you've gotten them out, and you're left with 20%, and you put them in shelters, and you expect that once that's over with, you're going to get the support from the federal government, you know, and you've got a war across the other side of the world, and you're dealing with American citizens. I'm sorry.
When we start getting into that whole issue of that there's this war, bogus war that was based on a lie, and that we don't have. Although the King George did say that we could do both, we can have a war and we can take care of everybody.
But
here.
There's a lot of agencies working incredibly hard. But what about our community?
You know, I was so moved. I arrived here on Tuesday, and immediately I started getting a lot of calls. Actually, I started getting a lot of calls on which calls would come through on my cell phone on Monday. Because I'm involved with the International Association of Lesbian Gay Officials, which is called INALGO, their conference was in New Orleans last year, so they were able to experience the culture and see the architecture and the specialness that it really is New Orleans. And they called and said, you know, we need to do something. Troy Perry from the Metropolitan Community Church, a personal friend of mine, and so I arrived and I thought, and they said, we need a 501c3, and I thought, immediately I called Jack, and I said, you know, we need to get Pride together, we need to run some funds through there, we need to worry about taking care of our own. We came up with a theme about taking care of our own, the Pride Houston.org. PrideHouston.org. The information is there. The checks would be made out to Pride Houston / Hurricane Relief Fund. And then we found an incredible match, which was the Montrose Counseling Center, that could counsel people that have been through trauma, that could take care of people and match them up with people with housing to make sure they had gay-friendly housing, GLPT-friendly housing, that can make sure they had gas vouchers and money for food. And we came up with all this by Friday between the Pride office and the people, Troy, who's in incredible, who really offered his services, sat there and put everything online. If you really want to access that, you go to PrideHouston.org, and you'll be able to get all that information on how you can contribute. And the whole idea behind it is to make sure that the GLBT community is taken care of. I ran into a lot of people yesterday, and I let them know to access that site and to make sure that our people are well taken care of. Once again, we're taking care of our own.
So. Is there an effort to get the word to those people who are still in Louisiana and the ones that are here that identify as GLBT so that they know that these things are going on?
There's two efforts. The Montrose Counseling Center put out a flyer this weekend. They were all over the bars here in Houston. I'm hoping Atlanta will pick up this same theme because a lot of people that left New Orleans went to either Houston or Atlanta. But the interesting thing for me is that when I was talking to Ann from the Montrose Counseling Nelson Center, she mentioned that she had already gotten three calls from people that were harassed in shelters.
Wow.
That were from the GLBT community that really need it. So you have an opportunity as the GLBT community to take someone in. And I might mention, as an incentive for that, I understand the federal government. I don't know how you get to that, but we'll give you 2 months of free food stamps for, you know, housing someone from this particular hurricane. And it's a long process, but that's an encouragement to do that. But you can access all this through pridehouston.org.
Well, and actually, that information, probably the MontroseCounselingCenter.org, is more specific than that. Basically, Pride, and I, you know, to disclaimer, is that I'm the executive director of the Pride Committee, Pride Houston. But basically, Pride's function is to get the word out about anybody who wants to donate money from anywhere in the country. You can either charge it online or send in a check, and then 100% of that money will be turned over to the Montrose Counseling Center specifically for hurricane relief.
Correct.
For the GLBT community.
And you know, it's interesting because everybody all over the country, I was fortunate enough to become a member of INALGO, International Association of Lesbian Gay Officials, and when I started getting all these calls, I thought, my God, I work with Pride Houston, I created the Pride Parade, I work with the Pride Committee, and I came back here, and you talk about learn how to not burn bridges behind you. When I walked in, and it was funny because when I spoke with Ann via a conference call, I ran into her and I was so moved. They called for a meeting here in Houston. There was 130, 150 people at that meeting at EJ's on Friday trying to figure out what they could do by closing and food vouchers and volunteering to open their apartment up. And I said, I don't want to step on anybody's toes. They were so excited about having me involved with this process. And the other thing was, it's this community embraced the idea of everybody coming in together to take care of one another. And I was so moved by that. Now, I want to say it's so nice to be able to come back to my second home where I started out at. And it breaks my heart that my home is flooded, and but we shall return. We definitely shall return.
Your family's okay?
Everybody's fine. The last person we got out, my nephew is a state representative, Juan LaFonta, and he was able to go back in because of his credentials and get his dad and his brother. They were the last two left. My sister's in New York with my brother, and the rest of my family is here in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm staying with some friends that have been friends for over 30 years that I met here in Houston, Raymond and David, and they've just been great hosts. They've made me laugh. They've cried with me, and they've watched. We had to turn the TV off because it just...
Yeah.
Yes, and if you're interested in watching some of the coverage directly from New Orleans,
yes.
Time Warner Cable is running on Channel 7 on the analog system, Channel 4 from New Orleans. And basically, they're running nonstop without any commercials, covering it from more of an inside perspective.
Wow, that's amazing. And what? When do you expect that you might go back to...
I go back tomorrow if it was possible. You know, I was standing with some friends last night, and I said, you don't know what you missed as far as your home. I would say to your listeners, hug your kids, hug your pet. Hug your lover, hug your friend, because Sunday morning, Saturday night when I went to bed, my life was just perfect. I worked with the job I love as executive director of the Human Relations Commission, the liaison to the city council people for the mayor's office. I lived 10 blocks away from City Hall. I love going to the clubs and seeing my friends, and with one swoop, one hurricane, my life has been totally destroyed. I came here with the clothes on my back, and I laughed at joke. Jack, 3 days, he saw me in the same clothes, and one day I came in with a different T-shirt on. He said, oh, you bought some new clothes. I said, no, my friend said, you need to change that shirt. You've been in it for 3 days. The point is that life is short. And we all learn that from many a ways, but I certainly learned it as I was driving my hours up the highway, bumper to bumper. Please respect your life because you're very fortunate to not be in the middle of this crisis that we're in. As soon as they say I can go home, we're going to all roll up our sleeves and we're going to make New Orleans come back better than ever.
Larry Bagneris, who
or
is
Bonnery, as some of us prefer to say,
who basically was one of the early people involved in the used to, at that time called the Gay Political Caucus, and of course the Pride Parade. You're listening to KPFT.
happened down here? Is the wind half changed? Clouds roll in from the north, then it start to rain. Rain real hard, the rain for a real long time. 6 feet of water in the streets of Evangeline. River rose all day, the river rose all night. Some people got lost in the flood. Some people got away all right. They were half busted through, clear down a plaque of mine. 6 feet of water in the streets of Evangeline.
Randy Newman from the album entitled Good Old Boys, and that was Louisiana 1927. And of course, you're listening to KPFT, and this is Queer Voices.
Is there a natural bond between organized labor and the fight for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender rights? The queer organizations and other advocacy groups represented at the United Nations Commission on Human Rights meeting earlier this year sought to highlight that connection during a panel entitled In Union, How Can Workers' Rights and the Struggle for Equality for Sexual Minorities Advance Together? Public Services International, or PSI, is one of the world's largest unions with over 25 million members. Its Secretary General Hans Engelberts was one of the panelists who addressed that question.
In PSI, we started to have a resolution adopted in 1993. It's one thing to get a resolution adopted, but then to implement it in practice is another thing. So we said we were for equality. Ever since the French Revolution, we have been for equality. But if you look around you, we're still a far end of equality on quite a number of areas. Last year, we had a pay equity conference here, particularly for women. All around the world, women still earn less salary than men. Now, the issue of working for lesbian and gay members, it's easy at an International World Congress to adopt a statement. But it became quite clear when we had the first international conference in Amsterdam in 1998 that a lot of unions were not doing very much with regards to gay and lesbian members. In fact, when we had meetings in Amsterdam, most of the unions present there were either from public service unions or teachers unions. And most of them came from, let's say, Northern Europe. We have unions in the UK who have active groups, in Germany, the Scandinavian countries, in Holland, in Canada, in Australia, New Zealand. And then the international trade union movement in its totality at that time was also not present. So if you want to implement some of the work, and that's why EI and PSI started working together, and Kurshad at that time was still the international secretary of Unison in the United Kingdom, so we asked him to make a publication. And that copy is now five. We had recently the forum together in Brazil. and there were more people. We have now a number of unions also in Latin America who have the courage, because it requires courage to come out and to declare yourself openly to be either gay or lesbian. Because for a lot of people, it might damage their career. And we've had, in a number of unions, even presidents standing up and coming out. Straight unions are dependent on activists. Unfortunately, we're getting more activists. But our work as international organizations is promoting the unions around the world, and we have affiliates in 160 countries, that this is an issue for trade unions. We published this for the first time in South Africa. But apart from the unions in South Africa, most of the unions in Africa are afraid to touch the issue. They might have Mugabe on their neck in Zimbabwe because he has a strong position on this. We also see it in other societies where churches are trying to prevent that something happens. So this is a task that we still have to carry out. And we need to do is not saying it's just enough what happens in Europe and then they can make some progress. You saw what happened recently in the United States. That was not progress. That was going backwards. So there's still a lot of work to do for us. And the first thing for us is to convince unions that this is trade union work. Harassment, discrimination is trade union work. That's where both EI and PSI want to work in convincing some more of our organizations. And we try to do this also in working together with ILGA, with other organizations. We're very active in the women's movement because, again, there's not equality. We have been active for indigenous people because, again, then there's no equality. But we also have disability and other issues. So convincing our own trade unions that this is a trade union issue is one thing, but then trying to get the activists in the unions to do something. And as I said, it requires courage. And sometimes you need a couple who have to give each other support that this can be done. So the work that has been going on now for a number of years in Sydney, and I think next year there's another Workers' Out conference. For us, there's an interest to work together with those organizations, that more people will stand up for their rights, that they will become active in their unions. We get accused of promoting homosexuality. And we say we're not promoting homosexuality. We're trying to defend equal rights. We're trying to fight discrimination and harassment. And that is a task of trade unions. We hope that not only will we be able to promote this further, but perhaps to also help organizations in saying, now how do you start this work? How do you do this? How do you get people not to be afraid of the climate in which they're living, to come out, to show yourself to be an activist, to fight for these rights? And in some parts of the world, it is easier than in other parts. But we feel it also is our responsibility to try to assist as possible so that some of the very nice sounding statements and resolutions that we adopt can finally be realized in practice. We were happy also that at the last ICFTU Congress, which took place in December, some of the trade union confederations have taken it up now and want to create networks. Because, as I said, in public services and teacher unions, there is already the ground to do some work. But in a lot of other unions, particularly in the manufacturing industries, they do not consider this one of their priorities. And that's where also we still have to do a lot of work.
Hans Engelberts, Secretary General of Public Services International, spoke at a panel during the United Nations Commission on Human Rights entitled In Union, How Can Workers' Rights and the Struggle for Equality for Sexual Minorities Advance Together? His comments were recorded and edited by This Way Out correspondent Uma Kali Shakti, who also attended the meeting as the Pacific Regional Representative of the International Lesbian and Gay Association. We'll hear from another panelist, Anna Biondi of the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions.
With political and trade unions and other links, you know, you can make the issue of equal rights and non-discrimination go through and people recognize the value of persons.
Next time on This Way Out.
You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine, brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. You can also demonstrate your solidarity by taking part in an online benefit auction. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. Again, to find out more about special CD thank you gifts, subscriptions, and the auction, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
Every time we think about same-sex marriage, makes us sick to our guts. I mean, to people who want to commit to a stable, monogamous, lifelong relationship, what are they, nuts? It's unnatural. Now, a man should not lie with a person who is a guy. He should only lie to his wife. The Bible is clear. We're defenders of marriage in three button suits. We'll raise our double standard and see who salutes. Defenders of defending the institution against people who want to get married. Every time we think about same-sex parents, oh my gosh, we exclaim. I mean, to people who want to provide a protective and nurturing family environment, have they no shame? It's so deviant. It's the Lord's holy word, as my second wife said to my third. That a family's based on obligation and fear. We're defenders of marriage, connubial narcs, ever vigilant and patriotic, patriarch. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution against people who want to get married. One summer evening when my woman was doing laundry, I shared a six-pack with an old John Bircher. And oh, so wisely he imparted an ancient quandary. To ponder, he said, it's nature versus legislature. Are people born gay or do they turn gay just to piss off Dick Army? We're an army of dicks with a militant stance. Let's get the government out of our lives and into our pants. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution against people who want to get married and have their insurance carried and be beneficiaried and be next to the ones they love when they are buried.
That is one of my favorite songs about gay marriage, and that's by a straight guy. And that straight guy's name is Roy Zimmerman. He'll be in Houston this coming weekend doing a couple shows. This Saturday night, which is September 10th at 8 p.m. at the Mill Bend Coffee House. And that's a very nice venue. I've been there several times. You can find information at www.millbend.org or by calling 281-350-3052. And Sunday, September 11th at 6:30 at the Aurora Picture Show, he's doing a benefit both for the Houston Social Forum and for KPFT. Information on that is had by calling 713-641-4941. Again, that was Roy Zimmerman.
Well, we were supposed to have an interview via phone with Holly Woodlawn concerning the Houston Gay and Lesbian Film Festival.
Yeah, Holly Woodlawn was made infamous by the Lou Reed song "Take a Walk on the Wild Side." She was a transgendered person. I don't know if that's the term that she uses to identify herself, but who was part of the Andy Warhol entourage. And the film Superstar: The Life and Times of Andy Warhol is going to be the opening film for the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival on this Thursday night. They'll be at the Angelica Film Center Cafe. The reception starts at 6:30 with the film starting at 7:30, and that's Warhol night. And then the whole catalog of films that are going to be shown, I think it's over a two-week period, in various venues around town. For more information about the film festival, the website, www.hglff.org. That's the Houston Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. And so J.D. didn't seem to think that there was a lot to be offered, but there is a variety, and it depends. Kind of depends.
Nothing grabbed me.
Nothing grabbed you, but there is a few things, and they do have some events that are specifically focused for the women's community. This Wednesday night, during the regular Women's Night at Meteor, they're having a little kind of kickoff for the film festival events, and that's called Girls. That's Girls with a Z Party, and Meteor is over on Genesee. I always forget the exact address because I just think, oh, it's almost by Jack's house. So
yes, well, it's off of Tulum / Tuam.
Yeah.
Or Tulum / Fairview. It's sort of, you know, this city is amazing how the streets just change names.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
In the oddest places.
And on Wednesday, September 14th at 7 p.m. at the Aurora Picture Show is a group of short films called Girl Shorts, and it has a variety of films offered by many different directors. And they all pay tribute to the Sapphic Heart Set Aflutter. One of them is The Heart Set Aflutter by Christy McNichol. And they sound, some of those sound pretty interesting to me.
The Aurora Picture Show is what's called a micro cinema.
Yeah.
It's sort of a really neat place. It's an old church that they made into a cinema.
Right. And the Rice Cinema, Diverse Works, the Museum of Fine Arts, Aurora Picture Show, Landmark Theaters, Angelica, and the Aurora Picture Show are the venues that are part of the film festival. So, and I know that they provide great little maps to tell you how to get to the different places, and there are very many different times of day some of the films are shown. So whatever suits your schedule, you can at least participate in some. And something a lot of people don't realize is when you buy a ticket to go to one of those films, the money doesn't go to the film festival. It goes to the venue. So it's important that you support the organization that works. This is the ninth year in Houston. Back to our news about the aftermath of Katrina. I've been trying to get a hold of the women, Brenda and Wanda Henson, at Camp Sister Spirit in Mississippi. Some people know them because of the struggle they had to set up a camp that served the lesbian community in a small town in Mississippi, Ovette. They used to be in Gulfport. They ran a women's bookstore there. And Ovette is not on the coast, but it's not too far up from the coast, and apparently phone service is still out in a great part of the state. So if anyone has news about the women at Camp Sister Spirit, if they are okay, or maybe they would be opening the camp to help people that need a place to stay, if everything's okay there, I don't know. Please let us know. You can contact me, Deborah, at thedivadeb@yahoo.com and give me a report on Camp Sister Spirit, because I have not been able to reach them by phone. A
couple other things. This Wednesday is the monthly meeting of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and this month's speaker will be Max Beauregard, who's going to be talking about sort of demographics and voting and all that type of stuff, which I find rather interesting. Also, on Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. and Saturday from 10 a.m. to about 4 p.m. are volunteer times to work on the No Nonsense campaign database. And you can get some more information by emailing me, jack@queervoices.org. And we work on that all the time, because that's a continuous project. People from the No Nonsense campaign and HERA, which is the Houston Equal Rights Alliance, they're doing block walking, basically talking to voters in specific areas of town and asking them if they are registered to vote, are they, you know, what do they feel about this campaign, and then the follow-up on the database is to call them and remind them to go vote.
And another community announcement, the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Community Center at 3400 Montrose, Suite 207, on this Thursday night, starting at 8 p.m., from 8 to 10, is the Art Artist Mixer. And this is put together by Aaron Coleman, who's been a frequent guest on Queer Voices. And if no matter what you do, if you sing, if you dance, if you read poetry, if you do, maybe you're a ventriloquist, I don't know, whatever your talent may be, you play the harp, this is an opportunity to come and share that talent with some other people in the community. They say if the mixing is mandatory, the performance is optional, although if one has a burning desire, you're invited to flame up. So flame on. And you can contact Aaron at email address aaronsongs at yahoo.com. That's Aaron's Songs, because he's a songwriter, at yahoo.com, or call 713-522-0712.
Also this Thursday, the president, or the executive director, I guess, the Human Rights Campaign Fund, will be at Rice University at, there's a reception at 6, and the program begins at 7, and I'm not exactly sure where at Rice University, but I'm sure if you go to HRC.org, there'll probably be some more information.
That's the current executive director?
Yes, of Joe Solomon.
Solomon?
Yes.
And what is he going to be here to do? To talk?
To talk. Well, I'm sure he's here to raise money also.
Oh, yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
We're talking about HRC.
Well, you know, as we're talking about raising money, and of course our most immediate concern is with what is happening and with the relief effort. And we are, people, you hear the term refugee, and as far as people are seeking a refuge, but that is an alien term. And so the evacuees and the people from the other Gulf Coast states that need help, that is going to be very taxing on the resources of this city, the state, and on our community organizations. And it's going to be very hard. You know, even Jerry Lewis, when he says, I'm having the MDA telethon, but you know, let's split it up because, you know, these people are so in need. And we certainly would want the same done for us if it was happening to us. But it's just going to be very, I want people to be very conscious of what they do as they go about their lives and the fact that there are going to be needs. We didn't even get to talk to Larry about what is happening for those people who are HIV positive or have AIDS and the concerns about their meds and their housing needs, the special needs that population has. I'm sure there's some special needs for the transgendered population. And the Montrose Clinic is opening up services. Planned Parenthood is opening up services. Bearing Omega. A lot of the groups, organizations, I heard about out in Rosenberg, people doing things. So we as a city are really coming together and we're really doing what it takes. And it's not just, I mean, you know, it was kind of easy for some people because it was a long weekend that they had time off from work and they could go volunteer. But, you know, people got to go back to their jobs and those that are blessed enough to have them. So the need for volunteers, the need to make sure that what effort you put in is one that's really going to make a difference. Once again, I'm very proud of our mayor, Bill White. I think he really has done an outstanding job and really stepped up to the plate.
Well, and even the county. I mean, the county's the one that opened the dome, the Astrodome.
Right.
That was sitting there doing nothing.
But it took them a while before they got it organized. You know?
Well, yes. I mean,
And of course, I mean, when you think of what all we were dealing with, I mean, it's just...
Right. Where do you find 20,000 cots?
To see it now, though... I mean, it's a small city. It has its own zip code. 77230 is the zip code for the Astrodome. We now have a small town to a rather large town being incorporated into our already massive city. So And it's not just us. It's the other places near here. I know people up in Central Texas. I know the effort in Austin is amazing because, you know, they've had a little more time to get prepared. But really, we can while we may have shame for the response of some government officials or the lack of response, rather, we can be very proud of ourselves as Houstonians. And I just want to thank everyone and to say let's keep it up and let's remember that it is going to be for the long haul.
I like that one. The song is called My Love is Divine. The artist is Yvonne Perea, another one of the talented people who will be with us on September 24th at the Houston Women's Festival.
Queer
indie filmmaker Brian Sloan may be best known for his screwball wedding comedy, I Think I Do. This Way Out's Steve Pride says Sloan's debut novel, A Really Nice Prom Mess, skewers another heterosexual tradition.
I have to admit that Brian Sloan's 1998 feature film, I Think I Do, is one of my favorites. And his short films, Pool Days and Bumping Heads, are also fantastic. So it should have come as no surprise that his new book is the funniest read of the year.
I'm Brian Sloan, filmmaker and writer. I'm the author of A Really Nice Prom Mess from Simon & Schuster.
And what is the book about?
One night at the prom in which the lead character's date finds out that he's dating another guy. And when she finds this out, she's not too happy about it because she thought she was going to get laid. Basically, the night kind of gets worse from there. It's an all-night-long adventure through the prom and some of the seedier parts of Washington, D.C. as his life kind of implodes because of this secret being revealed.
What inspired this?
It basically came from not my senior prom experience, actually, but I had gone to another formal dance when I was in high school, and when I went to pick up my date for the dance, she was a little bit drunk. And, you know, I never really found out why she was, and we actually, once we got to the dance, we sort of parted ways because we clearly weren't getting along. This incident or this idea kind of had been in my head for a while as an interesting jumping off point for a story.
This would make such a wonderful movie. And I know the perfect director. There was this guy who did a movie called I Think I Do.
Yeah, I've heard his work is quite comic and, you know, funny. And it's funny, actually. This whole thing started out as a movie idea. It was a treatment I did for New Line right when I got out of film school. And they thought the whole thing was just too gay. This was like 1995 in the pre-Will and Grace era. So I sort of put it in a drawer and kind of forgot about it. And then I had a meeting with Simon & Schuster about writing some books for them. And I kind of pulled this out of the drawer and said, oh, what do you think about this idea? I sort of pitched it to them as 16 Candles meets After Hours, the Scorsese film where Griffin Dunne is sort of going on this all-night-long adventure in Manhattan. And can't get home, and it sort of takes its cues from the John Hughes teen stuff, but also from that sort of like all night long genre of film where you're kind of following a character in real time.
And now Brian Sloan, reading from his novel, A Really Fine Prom Mess. At this point in the story, our hero Cameron has abandoned his drunken date, had a fist fight with his secret boyfriend, fled in disguise with a drug dealer, only to find himself in his first gay bar. And all of this happens before things really get out of control.
I ordered a Coke, not wishing to break any more laws for the evening. Sitting there by myself at the bar at Secrets, I decided that I would keep to myself. Let me tell you, this was not easy. When you're a teenager and wearing a way too tight waiter's uniform at a gay strip bar, you tend to draw attention. So, in less than a minute, one of the strippers was hovering above me. Again, I looked to Tony Soprano's uncle behind the bar for help. If you give him a tip, they'll leave you alone, kid, offered the bartender. Realizing I still had Dimitri's dollar bill in my left hand, I slipped it into the beefy dancer's sock without even looking up at him. Sure enough, his tan, muscled legs sauntered down the bar, seeking more attentive customers. A few minutes later, however, there was another pair of socks straddling my soda. Unfortunately, I was plumb out of petty cash, my dad's Benjamin tucked into my tux, which Dimitri was still wearing in his office somewhere in the back of the building. Then I remembered the tip I'd accidentally received back at the Willard. I have to say, there was a twisted yet divine irony that this elderly Texan's $20 bill was going to end up as part of some male stripper's booty. Deliciously pleased by this fact, I stuffed the crumpled bill into the dude's right sock in hopes that he would move along. Yet this time my tip had the opposite effect, as the dancer crouched down right in front of me. With his privates bunched into a glittery gold spandex pouch at eye level, this go-go gay just sat there, bouncing on his thighs and smiling at me. Unlike most of the dancers at Secrets, who were muscle freaks with enormous shaved heads and bulbous arms that were the size of my waist, this guy, who'd stopped in front of me, was refreshingly funky-looking. He was uber-skinny, with a build only slightly taller than mine, but not any more filled out. He had a rosy, open face with pinkish skin, his face topped off by a shock of blonde hair, most of it sticking skyward. With earrings in both ears, pirate-style, and a sparkling stud glamming up the left side of his nose, he had some bad boy bling-bling going on, too. If it wasn't for his lack of clothes, you might mistake him for the bassist in a glam rock band with a name that would make your parents freak out. Maybe something like, I don't know, glitter buns? Anyway, as he bumped and ground away to a Cher song, I decided that a simple hello might be in order. He didn't say anything back, however. He just nodded, his smile growing bigger and more intent. It was a blinding Cheshire Cat grin with two matching movie star creases that framed it beautifully. Wow. I tried again to say hi, this time speaking louder to be heard over the din of the Cher. Still nothing. Then I tried a more conversational what's up, which also fell flat. Finally, instead of getting a response from the dancer, the bartender replied for him. Hey, kid, he can't hear you. I know, I said. Can you turn the Cher down? The bartender looked at me like I had asked him to concoct a Sex on the Beach or something. Then I realized why. As the dancer recognized someone entering the bar, he started signing to the new patron. Buck, said the bartender, is deaf, kid. He can't hear the music or a goddamn word you're saying. Okay, wait a minute, I thought. A deaf go-go boy who's giving me the full-on flirt named Buck? Someone is definitely not in Kansas anymore.
What do you want readers to take away from the book?
On a bigger sense, the book is definitely meant to be entertaining and meant to be this sort of wild tale of prom night gone wrong. But in a way, the book is almost not so much about coming out, but about just being honest with not only him, his friends, but really himself. If there's a message to the book, it's that the truth will set you free.
You're a playwright, a filmmaker, and a novelist. You just can't pick a job.
I like to tell my friends a girl's got to make a living.
This has been a conversation with screenwriter, playwright, filmmaker, and novelist Brian Sloan. Besides his brilliant first novel, A Really Nice Prom Mess, he has a new film called WTC View, based on his play of the same name, and it's currently screening at film festivals around the country. More on that when he visits next. For more information on this story or queer cinema, always visit prideonscreen.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Yes, it's raining on prom night. Oh, my darling, what can I do? I miss you. It's raining rain from the skies. And it's raining real tears from my eyes.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Uma Kali Shakti, and Steve Pride contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Don't forget you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Your help to keep this program on the air will now mean twice as much to us. Please log on to thiswayout.org for all the details. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We all thank you for listening on KAZU, Pacific Grove, California, WRUW Cleveland, Ohio, Arrow FM, Masterton, New Zealand, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we know you'll stay tuned.
hurt just a little bit. They climb inside your head like an old country song. They hit you where you live. Hey, where you live. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, 1,500 times all up past the raggedy old man. 1,500 times I've told him no.
That's Beth Wood with her song 1,500 Times, and I feel an obligation to mention that she's a straight artist. She'll be at the Houston Women's Festival on September 24th, but since almost everybody we play can be considered GLBT, when it's not, I feel an obligation to mention that.
Well, thank goodness that we do have many that are, and JD and I were talking, it's like we prefer songs that are about GLBT people or by GLBT.
Or both.
Ideally both. If they're queer and they're the music, it was, maybe it was written by a queer, even if it's not sung by one. That's what we like to promote because those people don't get heard anywhere else.
I like my music blatant.
Yeah. And of course, you can hear more of the music that JD worked so hard to produce, the audio file on This Way Out, and then Queer Music Heritage right here on KPFT on the fourth Monday of every month.
And anytime on my website. All my shows from the last almost 6 years.
What would that be again?
Well, I think it's www.queermusicheritage.com. Or www.queermusicheritage.org.
And I really loved that interview you did with Gretchen Phillips. And,
that was a lot of fun.
We only had an hour of it on here, but
there's 2 hours,
on the website, so people can enjoy that.
It was so painful for me to have to cut some of her interview for the radio version, but not for the Internet.
Now, see, she meets our criteria.
Oh, yes, yes.
Definitely.
Latent.
So I think this is for Mr. Valensky. Isn't the Pride organization also getting ready for 2006?
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, our first meeting for 2006, the general meeting, which is called a production meeting, is a week from tomorrow at the Multipurpose Center on 1475 West Gray at 7 p.m. And, of course, all of our meetings are open to the public.
A week from tomorrow. Oh, yeah. Tomorrow would be Tuesday.
Yes.
See, having this holiday has me mixed up.
Yes.
At 7 p.m. next Tuesday at the Multipurpose Center.
Yes, which is on West Gray, 1475 West Gray.
And so people can already be getting involved for that. And, of course, we were talking about you can go to the Pride Houston website in order to make a donation to the GLBT relief effort from the Katrina aftermath. Ellen DeGeneres was the person who was directly affected by the storm and the loss because she considers New Orleans her hometown and has many relatives there and in past Christian, which apparently is just no more. And in fact, the governor of Mississippi said that past Christian Gulfport and Long Beach were simply not there anymore.
Well,
he likened
the
damage
logic
to Hiroshima.
I love the logic of building the casinos on the water.
Right.
You know?
And during her show today, she launched a fundraiser. Unfortunately, that did not air on our Channel 2 here in Houston because the MDA telethon was on. But she's going to be hosting a separate telethon on Friday, September 9th, for the relief effort. Some LGBT-affiliated groups have mobilized this week to raise donations and offer assistance to people displaced from the affected Gulf region. The Rainbow World Fund is funneling donations to the nation's leading food bank network. Several websites, including rainbowrelief.org, gay.com, and Planet Out, are trying to connect people to other gay-friendly efforts. And in addition, the Dallas-based AIDS Arms Groups is focusing on helping people with HIV/AIDS who are displaced by Katrina and need help with medications and shelter. So there's many ways for us to get involved.
Interesting to watch this unfold with the use of the internet,
isn't it?
Well, and it's interesting because the newspaper, the Times-Picayune, was not able to publish.
Yeah, they're online only, right?
Right, they're online only, and they just had this incredible letter to the president today. Mm-hmm. That basically just like, where are you?
Yeah,
where are you?
Where was he and where is he?
The head of FEMA and the top people at FEMA should all be fired.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, we'd like to thank our guest tonight, Larry Begnaris.
Our Bonnerese. Bless him. And
depending on which side of the Sabine River you're on.
Yeah, isn't that funny that they would anglicize his name there? And unfortunately, Holly Woodlawn was not able to be with us, but the film festival, the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, is starting up. Next week, later this week, actually. And then we're getting ready for the Women's Festival coming up and a lot more. So thank you so much
for
listening.
And David Elliott, too.
Oh, David Elliott. How could I forget David?
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org.